New court documents show a top aide working with New Jersey Governor Chris Christie texted that the governor flat-out lied during a December 2013 press conference in which the governor denied any of his senior staff were aware of the lane closures on the George Washington Bridge that led to the Bridgegate scandal.
A real-life Spider-Man scaling Trump Tower. Turns out, according to police, the 20-year-old man from Virginia went to these great lengths all because he wanted to meet with Donald Trump.
With the release of its finding report, the Justice Department is sharing. The report identifies specific problems in the department, but the transparency of the report offers crucial foundation if we are going to move forward.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Thursday, August 11th, 2016. It's 5:08. Good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell. Welcome to another edition. Welcome to another business day, a Thursday, as we get ready for the weekend. And a big retail report coming up tomorrow. It is one of the bigger reports of the month. Everybody's getting ready for that, and the market's sort of reacting to that today, being a little bit tepid and a little bit nervous going into the day. Dow futures are up just a little bit this morning. S&P NASDAQ futures up just a little bit as well. Coming up a little bit later on in the broadcast, we'll be joined by CNN's Heather Long. We'll talk a little bit about the economy and politics and get her take on some of the developments that have been going on in the presidential race and on Wall Street. Her take always very interesting. We'll get that later in the show. Also, the business of sports coming up in a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about Nike and also LeBron James. If you haven't heard, he's running a contest. All coming up after we check the WGN market desk. Here's your overnight intel from around the world. Asian shares generally mixed this morning after U.S. stocks pulled down overnight by a sell-off in energy companies due to lower oil prices. There is some disappointment, too, over New England Central Bank's decision to cut the interest rate. Regional volumes affected by the closure of Japan's stock exchange for a holiday today. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong is open. It was up almost 1%. Also open today, Australia's market fell about 1%. And in South Korea, the market fell about 0.5%. That sharp sell-off we saw yesterday, again, came because of oil. Oil this morning is holding steady, at least for now, at about $41 a barrel, $41.69 a barrel. It's off just a couple of pennies from its low overnight. It'll be something that we'll watch as we move forward to today, through today. Also, a couple of big reports coming in earnings today. Labor Department is going to report on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits through the week. Freddie Mac also going to report on this week's U.S. average U.S. mortgage rates. And in corporate news, Macy's is going to report its quarterly financial results before the opening bell. There's a chance we may have those before this broadcast is over this morning. Ahead of tomorrow's big retail numbers, so we'll see how well they've been doing in the latest quarter. They have not, the retail sector has not had a good year, and we fully expect the latest report to share that as well. The head of Delta Airlines has done a sit-down interview with a couple of the networks, including CNN and ABC, to talk about the problems plaguing that company and to share more information about exactly what happened at Delta. Apparently, there was a small fire, now we've learned, that led to the power outage, that led to the outage that kept a lot of people on the ground over the last few days. The head of the company, Ed Bastian, the CEO, says this event at the airline was something that they had not prepared for, something he was not prepared for, and something that took a lot of people there by surprise.
It was dramatic. We never done this before.
In his first and only TV interview following Monday's meltdown, Delta Airlines CEO Ed Bastian spoke candidly about the apocalyptic computer crash that grounded the carrier worldwide.
Is this kind of worst-case scenario for you guys?
Apart from an actual loss of a hull and human lives, absolutely. You know, we've never experienced this level of outage before in our history.
Again, that's the CEO of Delta Airlines, Ed Bastian, doing an interview with CNN. There are estimates the company could have lost between $5 and $10 million, maybe more, because of the number of passengers who were put out by this, the number of tickets they sold that they could not honor. Also, they were offering $200 vouchers. It's unclear whether he'll keep his job, but clearly they're looking at whether or not a small fire at that, could have brought down their entire operation for a few days. Still recovering from that. We don't know if they're going to cancel flights this morning, but it is possible. We'll wait for their latest update. Usually comes about 5:30 in the morning to see if more flights will be canceled today. The business of sports front and center on the opening bell this morning. And Mark Carman, who you've just heard in for Nick Nigilli overnight, I've never heard such a... I mean, come on, Mark.
What's wrong, Steve?
First of all, it's not my birthday. It's my birthday. Call me. Then the harem of people calling you, the harem of women calling you to wish.
I can't control that. If people want to call in and wish me a happy birthday, why would I deny those phone calls, Steve? Do you have a judgment on that?
I do. I don't put my birthday on my Facebook page. I don't really, like, I don't like people. I mean,
why not?
I certainly don't beg people to call me at 5 o'clock in the morning to wish me a happy birthday.
What makes you think I begged them to call me?
I heard the broadcast. I heard you say, it's my birthday, call me.
I think Dave Ennett's mad at me, too.
No, happy birthday, Mark.
Yeah.
I came in to wish you a happy birthday.
See, thank you, Dave. Did I put a gun to the head of those callers, Steve? Didn't it sound like they just wanted to call and wish me a happy
Mark,
birthday?
Mark, what you don't know here, the reason he's bitter is because it's his dog's birthday.
My dog's birthday, yeah.
Oh.
Edward Rover Murrow is 8 years old today. Yeah. Nobody RSVP'd for his surprise party later today. I'm really upset about that. It's okay.
Well, why don't you put it out there that you want people to call in for Edward and make the whole show about Edward?
No,
I mean, that might not be perfect. You have a real show to do, like I was, you know, you were talking about the, you know, business and things that are important. Yeah. I was just kind of... entertaining myself.
But, you know, it is Andrea's birthday, and that is the one that takes
precedent. That takes center stage,
Can you believe that, Dave? I'm sitting there. It's my birthday. I'm talking birthday on the air. In walks Mary with balloons.
And you thought they were for you, by the way.
I can't, only because normally we don't celebrate a birthday on the Steve Cochran Show till about 2 weeks later.
Oh.
So
yeah, we're always late with the birthday.
Yeah, this is rare that it's actually being celebrated on her birthday.
Would you like to throw somebody under the bus and point as to whose fault that would be? I'm kind of interested.
No, because they got it right this time.
Well, we always forget, but I would never forget Andrea's birthday. But,
and also,
she wouldn't let you.
Personally, right. I'm scared to death to forget the birthday. I'm afraid that she might beat me up or something.
Well, that's a very valid observation on your point, Steve.
I've only been here for about 6 months, but I get that. You don't miss Andrea's birthday. So, but happy birthday, Mark.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 521. Welcome back to the program. The business of sports front and center on the program today. LeBron James is putting his name behind possibly your small business.
Do you run a small business? Are you a hustler? How would you like to win an endorsement deal from me? Send me your 23-second pitch on why I should champion your business.
That's a promotional ad running on CNBC featuring LeBron James. We're here with Mark Carman, Dave Ennett along. The way I get this is that he is going to pick a business out of this contest and be the spokesperson for that business.
Yeah, and it's, these guys are becoming their own corporations right now, and they're realizing how much power they have. And LeBron, he's at the height of his popularity right now, and this is a guy who's signing billion-dollar lifetime sneaker deals, right? I mean, he makes a ton of money on the court, but he makes more off the court. And now he's – I mean, when you talk to LeBron, he is incredibly impressive with how intelligent he is. He's got a photographic memory of what's going on the court, and this is just a different dude. I think I don't know what he's going to do when he stops playing, but he's not going to go away. He's going to continue to do stuff like this.
Yeah, and he's not – a guy who went to college.
Right.
I mean, he came right out of high school to the NBA, but he appears to have a real good grasp on the business side of things, which there are an awful lot of professional athletes who don't get that, but he certainly seems to does. He's to do that, and he's taken full advantage of it.
Well, let's talk from the business standpoint. Let's say I'm a small business, and he picks my business. What can I expect from that? I mean, he endorses companies. Am I going to become rich? Is my business going to become world famous?
Well, you're going to have a good business, I would say. I mean, it's not going to be just him, but he's going to get you a lot of promotion. I mean, that's part of it, right? You need eyeballs.
Well, and any time you have one of these contests of any sort, even if it's not as much his endorsement as it is the publicity you're going to get from having won the competition.
Right.
And we've seen that with some of the commercials that have run in the Super Bowl. Remember the guy who did, I think from around here, did the Doritos commercial, right?
Right.
And I think you do get a lot of publicity from that, and that's, aside from having LeBron James endorse your product, it has to be worth an awful lot.
It's nice too that he's doing this with small businesses, because you know he could have picked any number of big corporate businesses to do this.
Well, he endorses a lot of those already.
Right, yeah. Right. And you're also talking about a guy who's very busy and has his own life going on. But if he does endorse something, he's probably going to want to do whatever little he can to make sure it succeeds. I mean, he's a pretty integrous human being. So,
so this looks like it's going to be the next Shark Tank. And again, the contest runs between August 13th, I believe, August 10th, rather. So it's already underway through August 18th. You can get more information, I think, at CNBC and at Cleveland and Hustles. Is the website for that? So
wouldn't it be funny if a Bulls fan won it?
That's what I was wondering.
Right,
like,
right?
Are you taking out of state here, sir? Because I mean, why can't a Bulls fan?
That's right.
Run at it.
The other big news: Nike. This is people are still talking about this. Nike's going to pull out of the golf business. Also, at the same time, I think Adidas also decided they're not going to sell some golf stuff. And a lot of people are blaming the millennials for this. Is that a fair blame?
That could be part of it, Steve. I think that Nike appeared to be in great shape in the golf business with Tiger Woods being contracted with them and then others, Rory McIlroy. But I think it was tough for them to make the transition because they had such a strong brand in terms of shoes and apparel. And now when you get into golf equipment, it's a different animal. Does it take it away? Does it take away from your main mission? And based on what Nike said when they announced the decision to stop making clubs, they want to concentrate on what they do best.
Mm-hmm. But I guess the concerning part of this was how people overanalyze this. They say one of the things that drove Adidas and Nike both to do this was people aren't playing golf as much. Is that a fair?
Well, play is down. Yes, play has been down, but that doesn't mean it's fallen off the map either. There's still an awful lot of people playing golf.
Yeah, and the PGA is trying to fight against that. They're putting out stats like first rounds played this year were up 5.3% in June and up 2% year to date in 2016. I don't exactly know how they come up with those numbers, but of course golf is trying to put up a unified front that, A, our game is not dying, but the bottom line is that it is expensive and it is 5 hours and people do have less of an attention span.
It's not always 5 hours. Shouldn't be 5 hours.
How long does it take Dave Ennett to play a round nowadays?
Well, I mean, it really depends on where you're playing, on the course, on how crowded it is on that particular day, who your playing partners are. That all factors into it.
Right. I mean, I'm for ready golf, and let's be done in four and get on out of here.
Absolutely.
Come on.
It also brings up another question, too. The retail, we're going to see big retail numbers being reported tomorrow. Generally, Macy's is going to report today, but this is an area that's having a rough time. Under Armour as well. Dave, I know you like wearing Under. They've had a rough quarter selling their stuff as well.
I saw that, but I can't believe that this is doom and gloom for these companies, because I think that to a certain extent, I think in Under Armour's case, I think the analysis was that they had expanded some of their retail marketing too quickly. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's probably common in the retail business. I think that happens to a lot of businesses.
Yeah. Are people wearing this stuff, though, in the world?
I just bought a pair of Under Armour cleats. Yeah. I'm wearing them. I don't think it's going away. Yeah. It's interesting, though. I mean, Sports Authority just closed a ton of stores. Mm-hmm. I mean, where do you go? I mean, people are just buying things differently nowadays, which is an old story. But
right. I mean that, I think a lot of that is the online purchases now. It's cut some of those major retailers.
Mm-hmm. And also, they tried to expand overseas, and apparently the European market wasn't really into Under Armour, they found. So they couldn't. If you can't do that, you really can't become a global business.
That is an issue, but they might figure it out eventually. Under Armour is a good brand.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Ennett once bought me a nice fleece long sleeve. It's sweet. I love wearing it.
I did.
Was this a birthday present?
That was holiday.
Holiday.
Oh, it should have been birthday. See, that's what I should have done.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mark.
No, Mark Carman, thank you for being with us this morning. Dave Ennett as well. Happy birthday. Many, many more.
Always my pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:37. Welcome back to the program for this Thursday morning. The economy is at a precipice, is what one of Donald Trump's biggest supporters is telling CNN. We will play a little clip of him coming up, but we want to focus this segment on where things stand on Wall Street. We've seen some records broken, at least on the S&P, winning gold there on Wall Street. But are investors taking home the gold like the athletes are in Rio? And what about these economic plans? But first, I want to play you just a little bit of what I was mentioning to you, an interview on CNN and billionaire Carl Icahn telling CNN that he's actually fearful for the economy moving forward.
We don't have capital spending. I mean, spending for machinery, spending for factories. We are at an all-time low as far as productivity goes. We don't really manufacture products anymore. As far as I'm concerned, I think this economy can go into over the precipice.
Joining us this morning from CNN Money is senior markets and economy writer Heather Long. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning, Steve.
I look forward to our chats because I feel like out of all of the people we talk to, you have a really good finger on what's going on. Do you agree with Carl Icahn? Are we on a precipice?
No. Carl Icahn is definitely pretty extreme at the moment in his views by implying that the economy is basically going to go in a huge downturn and into a recession. So I'd say hardly anybody thinks that's going to happen in the next 6-12 months. We just had the reason that the stock market is winning gold, to use your term for the Olympic words, is because we continue to have strong hiring in the economy. You know, businesses want to add workers. That's an incredibly good sign right now. Similarly, our growth isn't spectacular, but we are expanding. So when you look around at the basic metrics, there aren't nearly as many warning signs as Carl Icahn makes it sound. That said, he does bring up good points, which is, and we've talked about this before, there's been an ongoing kind of surprise and consternation that you and I, consumers, are still going out and buying stuff at the store. But businesses aren't really doing the same thing. You know, they're not going out and investing more and buying new equipment, trying to do new research. And that is a worrisome trend, and it definitely makes us worried about, hey, how are we going to continue to grow long term if our businesses aren't going to do that kind of investment?
And that's to the next point. The S&P 500 hit an all-time high on Monday of 2185. People are talking about the Dow possibly reaching 20,000. What do these things mean to you and I, the average Joe on the street? We know what they mean to Wall Street and investors, but what are those milestones and what will they mean to us?
Yeah, good question. I mean, look, I don't know about you, but I think you and I, most of your listeners have money in maybe retirement accounts, if not additional stock market accounts. And the reality is the average investor is up 5% this year. So that's pretty good gains. And remember back in February and January when the market was way down, we were thinking it was going to be a terrible year. There were going to be huge losses. And instead, we've had a massive rebound since that point. The S&P 500 is up over 20% since those low point in February. And that's a massive turnaround to get back from those gains. And, you know, what looks like we can end the year on a decently positive note. It's not a killer percent. It's not a 10%, but 5% is bad.
I tried my hardest to find the precipice, something to back up the precipice, but I couldn't because not only are we seeing jobs being created, but the one other issue that we've talked about regularly is wages. We've actually seen a little bit of wage growth this year as well. So I'm hard pressed to find what is going on in his mind that he thinks we're on a precipice.
Well, I mean, the only point, again, that I think he's got is that notion that the why isn't there business capital investment? Why isn't there more of that? Now, again, the bulk of the U.S. economy is driven by consumer spending, and that's looking pretty healthy and continues to look better, as you say, as people are getting paid more and then people keep getting jobs. But, there's definitely a little bit of concern there. And I think the other number that came out this week earlier is for another big question mark in the economy is this term called productivity. So, how useful everybody is at their jobs in terms of going there, working hard, and actually producing more stuff every year. And that number's also been really low lately. People have been pointing out that it's kind of at a 30-year low. And so again, that's another question mark. It's not something that's going to tank the economy in the next 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. But it's one of those things when we say, why does this recovery just not feel so strong? That's one of the reasons why.
The other thing, I know you've been writing about this too. We were talking earlier in the year about the presidential candidates, how all this would shake out, what they would do. Now we're seeing some of the nitty-gritty of their plans. And I know Hillary Clinton has put forward some of her proposals, what she's calling America First, Families First. You've been writing about this. So what? Now that we're in the nitty-gritty, what are you seeing?
Sure. Well, I just want to clarify, Trump is America First, as we all know. And then Clinton is what I'm calling the family first economics. I mean, her basic plan is not that different from a lot of Democrats. She wants to tax the rich more, and then she wants to have government spend more, and that's how she wants to stimulate the economy. Her big thing is in her first 100 days, she says we're going to come out with a big spending package that will run for the next several years, basically the entire first term of the presidency, and that will improve our roads, our bridges, and our internet superhighways, if you will. So a lot of people say, hey, yeah, that's probably her best economic idea. There's been a lot of calls lately to have government spend a bit more in order to stimulate growth, and I think anybody, I don't know about Illinois, but certainly here in New York, the roads could really use some improvement, so I think a lot of people would like to see that. Beyond that, what does it mean by family-first economics? She really wants to have government do more programs and then more tax credits to help what she considers to be the working poor and working people. And that means things like, hey, you would get paid family leave. So if you have a new baby born and you need to take some time off, you would get paid for that at least for a few weeks. So also making college what she calls debt-free. So that doesn't mean it's free, but that means there'd be some option where you can go and not rack up a ton of debt, probably at a public university. And then she wants to have universal preschool. So every four-year-old in America could go basically to a free preschool, kind of like kindergarten. And so, you got to pay for those programs. And in her mind, you tax the rich, and those rich being people over about $1 million. And then you spend more on those types of programs to help families.
And then on the flip side, Donald Trump saying he wants more manufacturing in this country, wants jobs to come back. He's also talking about some of his economic advisors. I know he was focusing yesterday on steel production. He wants that to be done more in this country as it used to be. But it's really hard to hear what he's saying and what the details are because he's had so many other things to deal with this week.
That's right. I mean, he keeps trying to get back and focus on the economy because that was an area that he was really beating Clinton in. And when you look at the polls and people were asked, hey, who do you trust more on the economy? He would beat her. But now that's really evened and narrowed, almost 50-50, if not people trusting Clinton more, even on the economy. So that's a real problem for him. And that's why he's trying to get that message out. I think you're right. I would say from the big picture, what does Trump stand for? What he wants to do is really cut taxes. So, Hillary wants to spend more. Donald really wants to cut taxes as a way to get more money out into the economy, more money to businesses, and more money to individuals. So he keeps talking about how his tax plan would be the biggest tax cut since the Ronald Reagan years in the 1980s.
He's also on his list of advisors, economic advisors, has Steven Feinberg and John Paulson, Andy Beal. These names mean anything to you? Are they decent advisors?
Well, he's basically got a mix of John Paulson, very famous hedge fund manager who called the housing crisis correctly in 2008. And made a ton of money, made billions in that call. So you have a mix of Wall Street kind of billionaire investor type guys, and then you have a mix of Reaganite. So people who were very tight in Ronald Reagan's economic policy circle. So that's really the bulk of what you're seeing in Trump's group. I think a lot of people were surprised. He's been a little bit called out for where's the diversity? Not just diversity like, oh, you know, everybody's a white guy, but more diversity in the sense of there really aren't that many true economists as part of his economic team. You see a lot of, you know, again, wealthy investors, but, you know, I think people were expecting a bit wider range of typical economic experts.
Yeah, and women as well. I don't, the list, you have to read down into the paragraph before you see some names of women. I know that Hillary sort of floated around the idea of having the COO of Facebook become her possibly the Treasury Secretary, and she's mentioned a couple of other top women business leaders as well.
Yeah, that's right. You're spot on. And CNN did try to question some of Trump's advisors about that over the weekend. And you know, like most things from the Trump campaign, I think they've said, hold on, more details to come. And so they keep promising that this was just the first list of economic advisors and more names will be added to the list. We'll wait and see.
Heather Long is a senior money writer at CNN Money, the senior markets and economy writer. You can follow her at By Heather Long and read more of her stories. Lots of in-depth reporting at CNN money.cnn.com about the race for president, their economic plans, also the latest from Wall Street. Heather, it's always good to talk with you.
You too. Take care.
All right.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:52. Welcome back to the program. On the WGN market desk this morning, Dow futures pointing up about 51 points. The S&P and NASDAQ futures are higher as well. Waiting on earnings this morning from Macy's. Also, Nordstrom's will report after the bell. Macy's before the bell. They have not reported yet. We'll be following that. Let's get the latest now on commodities. And good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. The day in the marketplace yesterday that saw a five-day winning streak for soybeans come to an end thanks to favorable crop weather and also profit-taking. Corn futures firmed modestly, gaining against soybeans ahead of that report that's due out on Friday. It's the first real crop report of the season, and here are the expectations according to traders and investors who always give their guesses ahead of these reports. As far as the corn production, average trade estimate 14,757,000,000 bushels, and an average yield of 170.6. The average soybean estimate, 3,941,000,000 bushels, an average yield of 47.5. So the numbers all are higher than the USDA numbers issued in the last report in July. And then as we turn to the livestock trade yesterday, hogs up 2%, a technical rebound. Meanwhile, cattle turned lower. But hogs, well, still facing pressure from record large U.S. supplies of hogs and pork and an ongoing lackluster retail demand. But all in all, it was a pretty good rebound for the pork industry yesterday. Cattle futures, of course, moved lower. State fairs, the Illinois State Fair opens today in Springfield. And we also have the Iowa State Fair, the Wisconsin State Fair, and the Indiana State Fair. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. A couple of final notes before we leave you today. Some big stories we'll be following through the morning. Late yesterday, a federal appeals court said that the U.S. Federal Communications Commission could not block two states from setting limits on municipal broadband expansion. This is a decision that's seen as a win for private sector providers of broadband internet and a setback for the FCC, which had sought to expand municipal broadband networks. This will have an impact on all of us who use the internet because it will give private companies more control over how fast our internet goes, whether or not they can throttle it, that sort of thing. So it's a fight that we all need to pay attention to. And also late yesterday, Boeing, Chicago-based Boeing, announced it will not raise 787 production unless market demand demands it. It is a weak market for that airline right now, although the head of Boeing at a meeting, a conference yesterday, says over the next 10 or 15 years, he does expect that the demand for aircraft generally will climb.